Hi, folks. Welcome to the next edition of Serverless Crack with myself, Dave Anderson. I'm author and contributor at the Serverless Edge and technical fellow for Bazaar Voice.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mark McCann, architect at Globalization Partners and author and contributor at the Serverless Edge.
Hello, Michael O'Reilly, architect with Globalization Partners and contributor with Serverless Edge.
Good stuff. So something we talk about a fair bit is the whole idea of well-architected and have that as a something we've been using and speaking about for a while. It's starting to gain a bit of popularity in the software industry. And I noticed that Grady Booch tweeted on it there about just a short wee while ago. And Grady Booch is like a legend. He's a fantastic software architect. He's done a lot of stuff around, a lot of really pioneering software engineer work. I've seen him speak once at a conference. He's absolutely brilliant. I'm a massive fan. And his tweet was actually good. He says, it's a good thing that AWS, Azure, and Google are offering guidance around building, around well-architected. But he did put a bit of a warning, but say, be aware, when they say well-architected, it also means a bias towards our products. Folks, dissect and discuss.
Yeah, I think he nailed it. I think there is an inherent bias, I guess, with the providers. They're investing in these frameworks, so they will have a certain leaning towards their own ecosystem and their own services. But there's a big but here. I think we have found that they are broadly applicable, and we can speak very, very much about the AWS framework. And it is, if you squint at it sideways, you can extract out the implementation details and to focus on the principles and the values behind to delivering a well-architected solution. So I think if you take it all with a pinch of salt, you can abstract a huge amount of value from them, even if you don't embrace the services that are aligned to that cloud provider.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've run pillars of the well-architected framework on non, so obviously working primarily with AWS in the past, but I've run pillars such as like the operational excellence pillar with squads, not working directly in anything AWS related. And again, it's the collaboration, it's the questions, it's the mindset, the thinking that is actually pretty good, and fairly consistent across whatever kind of tech stack or platform that you're leveraging. So I think there can be sometimes, I'm not saying there's any traps or anything in things like well-architected or for that you could kind of fall into. I think it is fairly balanced in relation to some of those questions. But yeah, of course, there's always going to be a bias to the cloud provider, given, those you're going to be working within certain constraints or, certain conditions when you're kind of working in one platform or the other.
Yeah, I think the questions are very similar. The answers may be a little bit different, but even just asking those questions is hugely valuable, right? And as long as you can apply it to your context, you can get a lot of value from it.
Yeah.
I certainly will. One of the things, I think we started using this a couple of years ago, and again, there was two interesting points, and I agree with Grady. I think it's a really good point. He's bang on. He's at some almost 600 likes, so it's getting a bit of traction, which is brilliant. But the two things that I looked at the start, the first was, I remember having discussions with people who were asking what architecture was and weren't quite sure what architecture was and trying to redefine architecture. That sits very uncomfortably with me. And people like Grady, that's not even a question. It's like, hello, what are you talking about? But I think with some of our less technical colleagues, sometimes you need to give them a definition of this is what architecture is, and there's an industry behind it, which is sad but true. The second thing is as I brought this in the past, I did a comparison between the three. I remember having part of a presentation to actually explain to people that well-architected is a thing. It's not just something I made up. And what I kind of found from that comparison, it was all roughly the same stuff they were shooting at. But the interesting, this is just my opinion, the AWS one, AWS is driven by like principles or tenants. So a lot of the stuff they do is very principle orientated, like very hardcore tenants. So a lot of the principles in the framework are quite applicable elsewhere. So it was quite a clean framework that you could reuse. The Azure one was almost like, I don't want to say it was like a wizard, but it was taking you on a path I could see it taking you on a path, which was probably good 90% of the time. But I always worry, what happens if that's not right for you? And then the Google one I thought was really nice, actually, but the bar was quite high. So, I mean, it was pretty much be a hardcore SRE or we don't want to talk to you. So I thought there was a bit of a, almost like the influence, or maybe, I don't know, the culture of each of the providers slightly came through in the framework, which I thought was interesting. I thought they were all really good frameworks.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that statement, you know, like be aware when they say well-architected, it also means with bias towards our products. I think it's a fair enough statement, because when you think about like AWS, for example, you know, if you're going to leverage a lot of the well architect or a lot of the AWS services, you're going to be EDA, for example, right? So that is going to bias you towards operating in certain ways and leveraging certain kind of ways to communicate, whether that's like Kinesis or EventBridge or SQS, SNS, you know, being able to connect certain things together and that. So that's, I don't necessarily think it's just a statement of fact, you know, like, so if you're going to go into these spaces, you're going to be working in certain ways, you know, like, so if leveraging sort of those services in the cloud are going to need you to be working in EDA and whatever, you're going to be have more bias towards leveraging those services. The same way in Google, like, I'd be interested to see why the focus is so much on SRE and stuff like that. Maybe it's, you know, there's more requirements on squads to maybe look after more of the resources. Is that because it's more K8s or more sort of container oriented? You know, so really in their head, you know, customer success is more driven through proper SRE and proper operational excellence. So I think it definitely makes a lot of good sense, you know?
Yeah, well, there's, I mean, a lot of the Google principles, like, you know, came out of, or the SRE principles came out of Google. That's, you know, a lot of the people, we've met a few of them, put together a lot of the original work. Did it while they were at Google, you know. But the thing I thought was interesting is, and I definitely experienced this, when you ask one of the, so two things, the company will write their framework in their own language, which will have a bias towards your products, right? So you need to be able to see that and see the difference. The second thing is, if you ask one of these companies to do a well-architected review on your product, you're going to get a solution architect from that company to come in and do it. And all they know is their products. So when you get an AWS solution architect to look at your product, they'll start recommending AWS products. Mm-hmm. So that was the big learning for me, because I thought I would like to use this, but I don't want to have to keep asking a solution architect in. They try and sell us stuff, you know, which is what they do, and that's fine. So that's, and the big learning I had, and we all went through this, is that it's not the framework, it's the process that you put around it. And the big learning I think that we had, that we've had great success with, is the process does not involve the cloud provider. We'll run that ourselves and we'll apply the framework ourselves. Yep. I think that was the big shift, that we use the well architected as a benchmark that we can self-assess. I thought that was a massive.
And I think you need to be a bit brave to do this, but it's you know, applying your own context to it and just taking a punt on it and saying, right, let's just ask these questions, let's just run this process, let's run this against our workloads and see what lessons we can learn, and where we can, when we do this pitch, what does it learn, measure, and improve, right?
Yeah.
And the reason, the great advantage of doing this yourself is then that's your feedback loop established. So you're actually seeing what works, what doesn't work, you know, where your gaps are across all the different pillars, where you should be investing your time and your teams, and also across your org, right?
Yeah.
So that, you know, bringing in somebody external, they don't have the context, they're not going to be part of that feedback loop, and it's a once and done type engagement, yeah. Right?
And plus it's quicker, you know. This happened to me last week, talking to somebody about something, and we should do architected when we do it. How about this afternoon? Yeah. You just sit and do it. You don't need to bring some person in and then get them up to speed, you know, and all that. That's big delay. Like, you just sit down and you can it's the time.
One of the great things about these frameworks across the board is they're out there. They're publicly accessible. It's not some secret magic book that a vendor has under their desk that only the high paying customers get to see, right?
So I think some vendors do that.
This is the whole thing. Like, these things are they're moving to commodity, right? They're commodity capabilities that you can Google for, that you can look up, and you can enable and empower the teams to do this themselves. They can ask these questions themselves. It's all freely available. So a lot of the process that we have established, and we write about it in the book as well, is right, you're bringing that process and enabling teams to do it themselves with a little bit of guidance and a little bit of advice, right?
I think that's important
as well, because if the team needs help, like somebody senior in the company can come and help them. If you still need more help, you can then bring in the cloud vendor to say, help us through this, and you're working on the same framework, you know. So you can say, listen, we're doing this pillar and we're having problems with these three questions. You can go straight in, you know, to the there's a benchmark there.
And I think establishing that common language is critical as well. Everyone knows that, hey, we're delivering well-architected solutions here, and then they can figure out what that means for them and their context.
Well, that's the bit. I'd say, you know, look, we talk about it like with the flywheel and, you know, the whole clarity of purpose. When you can kind of mix in clarity of purpose to the well-architected framework, it should kind of combat any sort of bias towards, you know, going for something for bias's sake. You know what I mean? So your focus should always be on, you know, solving the problem at hand with the tools that you've got at your, you know, disposal. And I think if you're running through well-architected with a good, solid clarity of purpose, and you're able to leverage the tools of the cloud in a way that actually helps you meet that faster, more efficiently, then I think you're in a good spot. You're in a good space, you know, so the bias actually works to your advantage, you know, but you have to do that in the correct way, I guess, is the way I think about it.
I think this isn't something that your architect does to you. This is something that the team should be embracing themselves and making an iterative, incremental process. And I know, Mike, you've written about this a lot. We put the blog post out there about the SCORP process, and we've got it in the book as well. But you know, it doesn't need to be a big, scary thing that some architect from on high comes down and imposes on you. It can be a very useful learning and enablement tool.
Yeah, just constantly self-assessing. Continuous improvement is the way to have sort of massive, significant gains. And I think when we look at that with well architected, as you guys mentioned earlier, it's like it's the benchmark. It's how we baseline ourselves. But we'll revisit that on a sort of every couple of weeks, every month, and just check how we're doing against it. And that's how we build world-class squads, world-class teams with world-class outcomes.
Yeah, for sure. I would definitely give Grady Butch a follow. It's Grady_Butch. And if you want to find that tweet, just I'll go into Twitter and just search for Grady Well Architected, three separate words, and it'll pop up. So it's a good discussion. It's not like we actually have a piece about, we had our SCORP process that we talked about in the blog. There's a nice blog article that Mike put together, and there's a good chapter in the book about that as well, about how to apply well architected in this manner that we're talking about. So I think there's a nice set of instructions there, and it's definitely based on that, the continuous improvement idea. And again, it goes right back to that long-term value kind of phase of the flywheel. So I think it's I'm glad it's getting some attention, because it is a really important topic. So I think there's a lot more we need to educate people on how important a concept like this is, because architecture, unfortunately, is very ambiguous for lots of people, which is
and I think no matter what or cloud you find yourselves in, seek out their well-architected guidance. Don't custom build your own approach. This stuff's been hardened and proven across thousands and thousands of increments and implementations, and it's battle proven. It's road tested.
Yeah. You're getting learnings from hundreds of solution architects in the field put under that framework, so you'd be mad not to use them. All right, so that's the crack anyway. Good discussion with architected. So those blogs are on the blog on theserverlessedge.com, and obviously the chapters in the book, The Value Flywheel Effect, which will be published in November. So give us a wee like there on Twitter at The Serverless Edge and on YouTube. Thanks very much.
Bye, everybody.